From the Independent Producer Project and KCRW.com, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Today on the program, a weirdly funny, politically incorrect politician with a populist message promises to fix a crisis in his country with a tough, no-nonsense approach. We turn to the Philippines. Why, did you think I was talking about someone else? After taking office, President Rodrigo Duterte directed his country's police force to kill drug suspects as part of the country's war on drugs. The police in the Philippines pretty much have free rein to shoot first and sort things out later. And many more drug dealers, users, and bystanders have been killed vigilante style under Duterte. Most Filipinos think he's doing a pretty good job, though, despite the killings, or more likely because of them. A warning, by the way, that this episode contains some descriptions of drug use and violence that are not suitable for children. Veteran foreign reporter Michael Sullivan takes us on a trip through Duterte country, where you have to start in Davao, on the country's southern island. It's a city where Duterte got his start as a politician, where he was mayor for over two decades, and where he first left his mark, for better and for worse. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional, and shoot first.
Make sure you see your change. 63 peso. Thank you, miss. Have a great night. Enjoy your Sunday.
Not that long ago, Davao was a largely lawless city on the largely lawless island of Mindanao, known more for its Muslim and communist insurgencies than Krispy Kremes. Without Duterte, this Krispy Kreme, this mall, probably wouldn't be here. Without Duterte, says Vicente Lau, Davao wouldn't be one of the safest cities in the country.
He made it that way.
Lau is chairman of the Mindanao Business Council. He remembers what it was like here during the communist insurgency in the 80s, when Lau was a contractor trying to build a bridge.
There are days that I have to fish out bodies from the scaffolding in our bridge side because they were executed upriver, no? And they get stuck in there and I have to fish them out. It was really bad. The guy might be not a sweet talker, but he's a doer, you know. He gets things done. Some of the ways he does it maybe is a little unconventional, but it gets things done.
And in Davao, there's a lot of rules in a country where rules are usually flouted. No smoking in public, no fireworks, a curfew for minors, and no selling of alcohol after 1 a.m., and CCTV cameras all over the city looking for trouble. And despite his foul mouth and tasteless jokes, Duterte has done a lot to encourage women, too.
He's not perfect, but he's doing his best for the women and children. His heart is bigger than his mouth.
A women's development code, a center for victims of domestic violence, a children's welfare code, all municipal firsts in the Philippines, says Jeanette Ampog. She runs Talikala, a local NGO that helps sex workers and trafficking victims. And about those sex workers, Duterte has unofficially decriminalized prostitution in Davao, despite a nationwide ban. At Christmas time, he's even hosted Christmas parties for commercial sex workers and their families. Jeanette Ampog.
Because the president believes that these women are human beings and deserve to be protected, and they're only doing this to earn something for themselves and for their family.
This is the side of Duterte you don't see or hear about in the foreign media. Not just a crude populist, but a progressive. One who dresses and talks like an ordinary guy. A guy whose concerns seem to echo those of the ordinary Filipino. A guy who gets things done. But critics say Duterte's success as mayor of Davao came at a very high cost. More than 1,000 extrajudicial killings during his time as mayor there. Killings attributed to what became known as the Davao Death Squad, which answered, critics say, to the mayor himself.
There's no doubt in my mind that Mayor Rodrigo Duterte is responsible for these killings.
Carlos Conde is a researcher with Human Rights Watch in Manila, which produced an exhaustive report on the killings years ago, including interviews with witnesses and survivors, a report, Conde says, that leaves little doubt that the death squad was run by City Hall. And when these allegations resurfaced during last year's presidential campaign, Duterte didn't run from them, he embraced them.
In public, he said, you know, he said that he is the death squad, that he is behind his killings. And it's not true that there are only hundreds of killings. the figure could be 1,700 over the years. Based on his public statements in campaign speeches, even interviews with the press, even in his own TV program, he admits as much.
And his simple law and order platform during the presidential campaign, his promise to rid the country of drugs and crime and corruption, resonated in a country tired of all three. The man they call the Punisher, or Duterte Harry, the wild card, the wild man from the South, was different from the politicians voters were used to. I met 28-year-old Jan Corpuz slurping noodles at a stall in Manila's Malate neighborhood a few days before the election.
I'm going to vote for Duterte.
Why?
He shared the sentiments of Filipino people because he knows what to do, and it's just a simple trick and kill all the alligators and snake, and I think that's it.
Kill all the alligators and snakes?
Yes.
And you have no problem with that?
I think the Filipino people needs a leader that bends the rules a little so that make an example of bad guys stuff.
The next day, in his final campaign speech in Manila, Duterte famously told a cheering crowd of more than 100,000 that, if elected, he'd fill Manila Bay with the bodies of drug dealers if they didn't heed his warning to come clean. So many, he said, that the fish would grow fat feasting on their flesh. He won the election by a wide margin over the establishment candidates, and he didn't let up on the gas at all. The drug war was on.
It's going to be a dirty fight. It's going to be a bloody fight. I am not apologizing for it. I assume full legal responsibility for it.
And he had another warning and a promise for the Philippine National Police.
Do not bullshit me, but do your duty. And if in the process you kill 1,000 persons, I will protect you.
So the cops started doing what they were told. And a little more than 6 months in, the police haven't killed just 1,000. They've killed more than 2,000 in encounters with alleged drug personalities. And another 4,000 have been killed in vigilante-style killings linked to the drug war as well. On a warm September night, I'm in an alley in one of Manila's seemingly endless slums. This one is in the Arellano neighborhood of Malate, not far from the bay. It's close to midnight, and I've been told I'll find one of the drug war's victims here. About 100 yards down the alley, I do. A few dozen people gathered around the casket of 47-year-old Aristotle Garcia, killed, according to his family, in an encounter with police a few nights before. The cops say he was dealing. His sister, Karen Rana, isn't buying it.
No, he's a user.
He didn't deal a little on the side to pay for his own drugs?
No, and nowadays, with this kind of situation happening everywhere, especially here in Manila, he will not do that because he's already afraid to be caught and killed.
She reaches into her purse, pulls out a phone, and finds a picture, the police photo of her brother's body lying in the street. A .38 caliber revolver in one hand, some crumpled banknotes next to the other. She shows me the police report. It says her brother was trying to sell drugs to an undercover cop, but got spooked and pulled a gun. The cop, according to the report, then fired on Garcia in self-defense, 6 shots to the chest. This also makes Karen Rana suspicious.
And if he is resisting arrest, if you shot him once, he'll get weak. And you don't need to shot him 6-5 times another.
Was your brother left-handed?
No, he's a right-handed person.
Then that gun's in the wrong hand.
Yes, absolutely.
What you're telling me here is that your brother was executed by the police.
Yes, he was executed. They want to get my brother.
Her other brother, Aaron, thinks he knows why Aristotle was targeted.
Because he know all the persons here. He know all the users here. He know all the pushers here.
And one of those pushers, Aaron reckons, ratted his brother out to the cops in order to avoid being killed himself. People here say this kind of thing has been happening a lot. They also suspect corrupt cops of silencing those who might implicate them. But Aristotle Garcia's family won't really know what happened to him. The case is closed. He wasn't killed here in his own neighborhood, but I went to the local station just the same to talk to the commander, Chief Inspector Paulito Sabulao. This is in September, remember, and back then, with bodies falling everywhere else in the city, Sabulao was in trouble with his superiors because his men hadn't killed anybody.
Na-pre-pressure na wala dito si Colonel Grant.
My colonel was getting heat from his bosses, Sabula says, asking why I hadn't killed anyone yet. I told him I didn't want to make mistakes, but he told me to get on it. This was the first time I met Sabula, and I was impressed that he was sticking to the rules. A few months later, when I went back to check on him again, he wasn't in trouble with his bosses anymore.
Ang patay namin ay
12. He told me his men had killed 12 drug suspects since I came last, but channeling his best Raylan Givens, he insisted all of the killings were justified.
Hindi natin maiiwasan dito sa mga police operation na kagaya niya.
Sometimes we just can't avoid it, he explained. About half the time during these operations, these legitimate operations, he insisted, those we try to arrest fight back. In one of the last encounters, Sabula was there. He took a bullet to the chest, but he was wearing a vest. He unbuttons his shirt for me, actually probably for the young woman photographer I'm with, to show us the bruise. He's strutting just a little bit, so I play along. Chief Inspector, did you get the guy who got you?
Yes, twice. Hanggang nakahiga na siya.
I shot until he stayed down, Sabula adds. And in his precinct, things have been pretty quiet since that last encounter, more than a month ago. A lot less crime, fewer pushers and addicts of methamphetamine or shabu, the drug of choice here. And most residents say that's a good thing, most but not all. It starts pissing rain almost as soon as I leave Sabulao's office. But I don't have to go very far into the rabbit warren of alleys nearby before I find the house of Marcelina Malyari. Her son Robert was one of those killed by Sabulao's men during an alleged drug deal gone bad. She says the police are lying.
He was already rehabilitated many years ago. He is not using anymore.
When he came back from rehab, his mother says, Robert wasn't the same anymore, not quite right in the head. But he got by, she says, recycling used bottles and cans he found on the street. He always came home at night to sleep, she says, until the night he didn't. The police say her son was killed while trying to buy shabu from a dealer. And when the dealer shot at them, police returned fire, killing both men. Malyari's sister, Gina, heard another story from people who saw the encounter, but she won't talk on tape. She heard her brother was taking a nap when he heard a gunshot, went to see what happened, and stumbled onto the encounter between the cops and the alleged drug dealer. His mother says that's why her son is dead, because the police wanted the pusher dead, and her son was in the way.
So, and he will be the witness because he saw. That's why he was killed also.
You're saying your son was another victim of an extrajudicial killing by police in the war on drugs?
Yes, yes. And it's useless to complain about the policemen because they invent stories.
You think you can get no justice for your son?
Yes. So it's useless to complain. We did not bother to complain. It's up to the Lord.
At least Marcelina Malyari knows how her son died. In the war on drugs so far, the vast majority of the murders are unsolved. It's tradition here for chicks to pace back and forth on the coffin of murder victims, to peck at the conscience of the killer. There's a lot of pecking going on in Manila, all over the country, since the drug war began. This chick peeps on the coffin of 17-year-old Clarence Chaparde. His girlfriend, Rachelle, stands next to the coffin, the couple's six-month-old daughter, Roseanne, in her arms. The coffin sits outside the neighborhood captain's office. Some mourners and some neighbors play bingo just a few feet away. Clarence has been lying here 10 days already. The neighborhood has gotten used to him being around. Clarence's aunt, Jenlyn Ragandin, is the only family member keeping it together. Her frustration is clear as she explains how he was found.
Nung na-recover nila yung katawan ng pamangkin ko,
he was wrapped in a garbage bag, she says, and there was a piece of cardboard attached that said, I'm a pusher, I'm a robber, don't follow my way. And there was also a small bag of marijuana, she says, and an ID, and it wasn't pretty. Her nephew stabbed 9 times with an ice pick. Jenalyn Rugendine says she doesn't understand any of it. Her nephew wasn't a pusher, she says, and she's confused why the police told her there was a witness, a friend of her nephew's, who's since disappeared. And she says, pointing at the casket, my nephew has already been here 10 days and nothing's happening. And we can't bury him, she says. We don't have the money. It took another 2 weeks to scrape up the money to bury him, but they did, after the undertaker lowered the price to get it done. And just after I left, I found out later, disaster. That rain we heard back at the Malyari house, it created a flash flood in the alley here and almost swept Clarence and his coffin away. The chick didn't make it. The killer has that on his conscience as well. When the war on drugs began, drug users and drug pushers were offered a choice: surrender to police or wait to be hunted down. A staggering number of people chose the former, more than 1 million at last count. People in neighborhoods like Chief Inspector Sabulo's Arellano district, where the people are packed so tightly they often wash and bathe outside. Lilibeth Jago is one of the hundreds who surrendered in this neighborhood alone. She says it was an easy choice.
I'm scared to die.
Lilibeth says she's been using meth, or shabu as it's known here, since high school, and she's got the face and teeth to prove it.
Every day. Simula nung 1981 up to...
She swears she never dealt drugs, only used them, but it's a fine line.
Ang kajaming ko mga police.
When I started, she says, I was doing drugs with the police. We shared what we had, and they used my house almost like a drug den. And they'd give me and my husband 200 pesos for being lookouts. Jago says when President Duterte was elected and told addicts and pushers to turn themselves in, she and her husband quickly complied. They went to the precinct, signed some papers, got a warning, and were sent home. She says she's been clean ever since, but it's been hard.
Yeah, withdraw.
Ever since I stopped using, she says, her body aches all the time, her back hurts, and she can barely stand up. She'd like to go back to using, she says, but she's scared. Now that we've surrendered, we're being closely monitored, she says. If we start using again, the cops will know, and they'll come for us. I go back to the precinct station, a 3-minute walk, to talk to Chief Inspector Sabulao to see if Lilibeth may have been exaggerating. She wasn't. Sabulao says those who surrender and stay clean have nothing to fear, but I also warn them, he says, that if they continue using or deal, they'll be killed. Sabulao also shows me a list with a few dozen pictures and names of alleged drug dealers who haven't gotten the message. He's getting ready to move on them, he says, and he hopes they fight back when he does.
Kailangan na nilang lumaban para mapatay.
I only need them to resist, he says, grinning broadly. I encourage them to resist, because then, he says, they'll be killed. But you can't kill all of them. And that's created a problem President Duterte hadn't counted on when he started this war. At 11 o'clock at night, Roxabago Police Station Number 1 is still brutally hot, and the air conditioner over the door is failing miserably. The station is in Tondo, Manila's most densely populated district, home to some of the city's most notorious slums. And the tiny holding cell here is packed so tightly, some prisoners are literally hanging from the walls and ceiling, their hammocks strung above the heads of those below. Robinson Marañon is the deputy commander here.
Every week, there is continuous operation, arrest, more arrest. That's why this jail is supposed to be for 45 persons only. Now the number is 100 plus already, 130. I think it's 130.
So many, Marañon says, that the prisoners have no choice but to sleep in shifts.
4 hours, maybe 4 hours, and then the others will lie down. Then after 4 hours, the others will stand up also and the others will lie down.
And that frustrates the deputy commander because he needs them out to make room for new arrivals. But transferring them to the central jail is difficult.
The authority of giving the transfer papers are very rare. That's why these prisoners are being held here for a long time.
So the process is too slow to get them transferred?
To get the transfer, that's it.
So how long do these people end up staying here?
Some of them, three months, some of them.
He doesn't just want faster processing, he wants a bigger cell and more cops and better guns. But he's going to have to wait. Everyone is going to have to wait, according to President Duterte, because he doesn't have the money.
I am operating on a budget that was prepared by the other year, the previous year. Just like in any country, you prepare the budget now for next year's implementation. You know, we do not have the money.
And nobody expected there would be so many pushers and users out there, or that more than 1 million would surrender in the first 6 months.
Of They were caught unaware. The anti-drug abuse program was not really a priority during the previous administration, so we have a lot of catching up to do.
That's Philip Veracruz of the government's Dangerous Drugs Board. How much catching up? A lot.
We have 44 accredited rehabilitation centers all over the country, so the total bed capacity is 3,216.
Just to be clear, that's 3,216 beds for a country of over 100 million people. And despite the opinion polls, some Filipinos are wondering if President Duterte's war on drugs is just a bit too much. Down the street from Chief Inspector Palito Sabulao's office in Arellano, I talked to Cindy Medrano and her mother Corazon. They've been living here for decades. Corazon says things are definitely better since the war on drugs began. Fewer addicts on the streets, less crime, just as Chief Inspector Sabulao suggested. But her daughter Cindy has her doubts.
Kasi naman yung hinuhuli nila dito.
Cindy says she doesn't believe in the drug war and doesn't believe they're catching the right guys either. So far, she says, it's just the small fry that are getting killed or jailed. What about the drug lords on the list, she says? I don't think they'll ever capture them.
Would extrajudicial killings be okay with you if it were the right people being killed?
I disagree with extrajudicial killings, period, she says, because the law is still the law and everybody has to have their day in court. But Cindy, she's in the minority. The latest polls show President Duterte's approval rating at about 80%. Chito Gascon, who heads the Philippines Human Rights Commission, says he understands why. People are frustrated, he says, worn down, wore out. In this country, he says, the culture of impunity is rampant. Crimes are committed but never solved. People charged but never convicted. Money changes hands and criminals go free. And it's created a sense of injustice, he says, that President Duterte has tapped into.
This sense of injustice is personalized. It's created this phenomenon that we now have where people want quick fixes. It's a bit like we're back into the Roman Colosseum where they collectively put their palms down and say, finish him. That's the mood that's emerging. It's really very dangerous.
Gascon is gloomy. More than 30 years after the dictator Marcos was forced from office, not a lot has changed for the ordinary Filipino, he says. And with Duterte now in power, he's worried and uses a metaphor from Game of Thrones to make his point. Winter is coming, he says.
I grew up experiencing martial law. To me, it's a bit deja vu-ish, you know, that our law enforcement personnel, the police, the military, are essentially being given carte blanche to do what they want. So these are times that will test everyone, and hopefully there will be enough voices that will stand up for reason, stand up for what's right, stand up for the law.
But he doesn't sound very convinced, not even very hopeful. That conversation was recorded back in July when the killings had just begun. More than 6 months in, more than 6,000 are now dead. Chito Gascon's winter is already here. I kept trying to get to President Duterte to ask him about all this, to ask him if he believed things might be going too far, too quickly. And I finally caught up with him one weekend in Davao, where he was mayor for so long, a place he returns to as many weekends as he can. It's his happy place. I didn't get a sit-down with him, but I did get a chance to speak with him at an impromptu news conference there, just before he cursed out President Obama. I was the only foreign journalist there, and there wasn't a single question about the war on drugs from the local media. They knew enough by then not to poke the bear. But me, I was still green.
Yes, sir. May I help you?
Yes. Michael Sullivan, sir.
Can I just ask, do you care one way or another about the growing criticism, both at home and especially abroad, about the rising death toll in the war on drugs?
No, not at all. Not a bit, because I said there is a crisis. I have a problem here, so I will solve it the way I with my limited resources and the way I want it. I am not worried about the international community because I am not the president of the international countries. I am the president of the Republic of the Philippines, and I must solve decisively this problem, or else the 3,700,000 will compromise the next generation of Filipinos. Let us understand reality first before we go to the ideal theories of human rights and everything. For after all, America and Britain went into Iraq, killed so many people. How many women, children were killed along the way?
But the number of killings that have occurred that are not police related, that are not attributed to the police, do those bother you?
Criminals kill criminals. That is not my worry. It is the extrajudicial killing of people getting rid of the criminals by their own hands.
So your war, no regrets, I asked. None, he said. And then he wrapped things up with his usual panache.
At the end of the day, you listen, do not make noise there. I will shoot all of you. At the end of the day, it is really your love for your country. And that you want a new generation of Filipinos would have a better life than what we have had. Do not f*** my country. Do not f*** with our children.
And here's the thing. He really does seem to believe that the drug menace is an existential threat to his country, and corruption too. And even his critics, like the Commission on Human Rights head Chito Gascon, don't doubt his sincerity, just his methods. Last week, he even told reporters he'd consider reimposing martial law if the drug problem got worse.
I'm Lilibeth Diego. I'm 52 years old.
Remember Lilibeth, our friend from Arellano? She was one of the first people I visited just after the drug war began, one of the million users of pushers who've surrendered to police. I went to see how she was doing about a month ago. Still clean, I asked? Yes, still not using, she said. Still afraid she'll be killed if she does. But if there were no war on drugs, you'd be using again tomorrow.
Yes, Power Ranger.
Before, when she was using, she says she could do laundry for people from 9 at night till 7 in the morning and make good money. Now, she says, she has no power and just lies around the house watching DVDs and smoking. But Lilibeth's got a plan.
I know that there are those who do not approve of my methods of fighting criminality.
President Duterte, she says, only has a 6-year term. She reckons she'll just wait a month. I like Lilibeth, but I think she's reaching. I wouldn't bet against Duterte, who warned everybody what he was going to do the day he was sworn in.
You mind your war, and I will mind mine.
That story was produced by Michael Sullivan, an award-winning radio journalist who was NPR's senior correspondent for over a decade. These days, he lives in Thailand's Golden Triangle, writing radio pieces and making pizzas. At our website, you can find some really striking photos from the photographer Michael mentions in the story, Alex Ongal. It's at kcrw.com/unfictional, where you can also find the full archive of all our past programs. I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The editor is Nick White. The associate producer is Carla Green. Please podcast the program on iTunes, follow the show on Twitter @Unfictional, or like us on Facebook. I also hope you'll join me next time for Unfictional from KCRW.com.